This week on Vaticano, celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Pope's University in Rome. We honor the life and legacy of Cardinal George Pell, who passed away after suffering complications following hip replacement surgery.
I was very sad.
We watch the final interview he gave EWTN and discover the tradition of the Holy Ring. According to popular tradition, Joseph gave Our Lady a gold ring, known today as the Holy Ring. Vaticano starts now. The Australian Cardinal George Pell passed away on January the 10th, 2023, at 8:50 p.m., after suffering a cardiac arrest following complications from a hip surgery. Pell was, among other things, a former prefect of the Vatican's Secretariat for the Economy. He was 81 years old. George Pell was born on June the 8th, 1941, in Ballarat, a city in the Australian state of Victoria. He owed his Catholic faith to his Irish-born mother. His father was an Anglican, born in England. As a boy, Pell aspired to a career as a professional Australian rules football player before discovering his vocation to the priesthood. Ordained a priest in 1966, he was made Auxiliary Bishop of Melbourne in 1987 and Archbishop of Melbourne 9 years later. In 2001, he was appointed Archbishop of Sydney and was made Cardinal in 2003 by Pope John Paul II. 10 years later, Pope Francis appointed him to the Council of Cardinals, and the next year, in 2014, he became the head of the Secretariat for the Economy and led efforts to reform Vatican financial affairs. 2017 brought the darkest chapter in Pell's life. Accused by a single witness of abuse, he faced a harrowing trial, was convicted, and spent 404 days in an Australian prison, mostly in solitary confinement. He was finally acquitted of all charges in 2019 with a unanimous decision by Australia's highest court.
We are so grateful to be joined by our first...
Cardinal Pell gave his last known TV interview a week before his death on January the 3rd, 2023, with EWTN, paying tribute to the life and legacy of Pope Benedict XVI, who had died 3 days prior. Days after the funeral of Benedict XVI, Archbishop Georg Ganswein, Benedict's longtime personal secretary, met with Pope Francis in the Vatican. The private audience took place shortly before the public release of Ganswein's memoir. Published in Italian, the book, titled Nothing But the Truth, My Life Beside Benedict XVI, details the Archbishop's 20 years of service to Benedict XVI. It was released on January the 12th. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni has provided no comment on the memoir, which was co-authored by Italian journalist Saverio Gaeta. In Nothing But the Truth, My Life Beside Benedict XVI, Ganswein gives a deep insight into everyday life with the German Pope. He describes how Benedict XVI was already thinking about his resignation in 2012, following his trip to Cuba and Mexico. When the Pope reached his decision, there was no way to change his mind, Ganswein reports. The former Secretary of State, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, alongside Ganswein, tried to convince him to stay on as Pope, but they were only able to convince him to postpone his announcement until February of 2013. Ganswein also speaks very openly about his surprise at being abruptly relieved of his post as prefect of the papal household by Pope Francis. And yet, the Archbishop also takes pains to emphasize the friendly relationship between Pope Francis and the Pope Emeritus. He recounts how Francis would ask his predecessor for advice, and Benedict wouldn't allow guests who visited him to complain about the sitting Pope. Ganswein also tells how Benedict XVI, even after his resignation, personally prepared his homilies with notes written in a notebook. The four consecrated laywomen who served the Pope Emeritus recorded and transcribed them. Overall, Ganswein's memoir takes a very personal look back at the years he spent at Benedict XVI's side. Alongside his personal insights, he offers historical context to the happenings of Pope Benedict's papacy. But mostly, the former papal secretary wants the world to see Benedict XVI as he always saw him, as a humble servant in the Lord's vineyard.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. In his Angelus address, Pope Francis announced that an ecumenical prayer vigil will take place in St. Peter's Square as part of the Church's ongoing Synod on Synodality. The ecumenical prayer vigil, organized by the Taizé community, will entrust to God the work of the 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops. This Synod of Bishops is set to take place in two sessions from October 4th to the 29th of 2023 and in October of 2024. The Holy Father told American seminarians in Rome that they are called to take up the challenge and task of the synodal journey of listening to the Holy Spirit and to one another. As they study to become priests, the Pope met with students, staff, and faculty of the Pontifical North American College at the Vatican. Now, Francis said, "This is also the challenge and task you are called to take up as you walk together along the path that leads to priestly ordination and pastoral service." Pope Francis met Giorgia Meloni, Italy's first female prime minister, at the Vatican. The private meeting, which lasted a little over 30 minutes, Meloni was among the first to pay her respects to the Pope Benedict XVI in St. Peter's Basilica on January 2nd, together with Italy's President Sergio Mattarella. At the papal audience, Meloni introduced her team to Pope Francis, along with her six-year-old daughter, who also took part in the meeting. The Vatican Promoter of Justice announced that the investigation into the vanishing of Emanuela Orlandi will be reopened. Orlandi is a teenaged Vatican citizen who disappeared in the 1980s and has since spawned a myriad of conspiracy theories. In a brief statement, the Holy See Press Office reported that the decision to reopen the investigation was made partly in response to several requests made by Orlandi's family. In a message published ahead of the World Day of the Sick, Pope Francis said that sickness and vulnerability is scary because it is a threat to the culture of efficiency. The pontiff said, "The plight of the sick is a call that cuts through indifference and slows the pace of those who go on their way as if they had no sisters and brothers." The Catholic Church will mark the 31st annual World Day of the Sick on February 11th, the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. My name is Benjamin Crockett for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. On November the 15th at the Pontifical Lateran University in Rome, a ceremony was held to mark the beginning of the new academic year, the 250th academic year since its founding. Cardinal Angelo De Donatis, Vicar General of the Pope and Grand Chancellor of the University, opened the inauguration.
It is important because it is the University of the Pope, of the Bishop of Rome. So it is a place of life, a place of culture, of faith. Therefore, the importance comes precisely from this fact that it is the University of the Pope, of the Bishop of Rome.
Del Papa, del Vescovo di Roma.
The foundation of the Pontifical Lateran University dates back to 1773, when Pope Clement XIV suppressed the Society of Jesus, entrusting the seminary and school of the Collegio Romano to the direction of the secular clergy of the Diocese of Rome, and under the immediate dependence of the Pope.
It's a unique academic structure in the world because it's of the Pope. It's not just a pontifical university. It refers precisely to what is the ministry of the Pope, for the Church of Rome, but which is offered to the whole world.
Al mondo intero.
Located within walking distance of the chair of the Bishop of Rome, the Basilica of St. John Lateran, the Pontifical Lateran University has 121 faculty members and over 1,800 students from all over the world.
An importance that comes from a 250-year history, but also from an ability to stand on reality seen by what is the ministry of the Pope. The Church has always taken care of these places because it is aware. It is aware that they are really places of authentic life, and therefore they must be supported and encouraged. There is a need to promote these places of culture. The Church has always done so, and so will I.
250 years after the foundation of the university, it is still proposed as an instrument of cultural and scientific growth.
For this place, I hope that there will be more and more young people who are passionate about the study of theology, but also of other sciences. But that it will truly be a place of authentic formation for a complete person, because this is the task of the university, not to develop only specializations, but to have an integral vision of man.
The Pontifical Lateran University is unique in that it has the special title of the University of the Pope, a title undoubtedly honorific, but for that very same reason, onerous.
I'm Owen Jensen. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, a towering figure remembering the life and legacy of Australian Cardinal George Pell.
Cardinal George Pell, the former prefect of the Vatican Secretariat for the Economy, died unexpectedly on Tuesday evening, January the 10th in Rome, at the age of 81, after suffering complications following hip replacement surgery.
What was he like?
EWTN News correspondent Colm Flynn interviewed Cardinal Pell for the last time in the wake of the late Pope Benedict XVI's death.
Your Eminence, what was your initial reaction when you heard that Pope Benedict XVI had passed away?
I was very sad. As a matter of fact, I was surprised how sad I was. I knew he was sick. I knew he was dying. I was rather pleased because I thought I'd heard that he'd rallied and was disconcerting the experts and going to live a little bit longer. But I'd known him well enough. I admired what he was about. I thought he was very good for the church. And so it was sad to see another wonderful stage in church history ending.
When people look back at his papacy, one of the highlights they point to was World Youth Day in Australia, when you were cardinal there in Sydney. What are your memories of that?
Well, we would, we Australians, we Catholic Australians would certainly say that. We believe he's being buried in the chasuble that he used in World Youth Day in Australia. But whether that's Australian propaganda or not, we're not completely sure. It really impressed the great majority of Australians who are not particularly religious, but open. And my greatest memory, he insisted that the great liturgical celebrations, the masses, that we should work hard that they are prayers and acts of adoration. And so he insisted on reverence and quiet. And we had something like 400,000 at the final mass. Biggest gathering in Australian history. And after communion, I could hear the birds singing in the morning. It was so, there was perfect quiet for the prayer after communion. It was a wonderful moment of recollection and adoration and prayer. He'll be remembered for his contribution to the liturgy. The liturgy should be beautiful, that we Catholics are not innovators in liturgy. We're people of tradition. You know, the rites go back to the time of Christ. The Roman rite, markedly similar, great similar for 1500 years. 80% of the prayers in the Mass, in the Roman Missal, are over 1,000 years old. He understood that, and through making the old rites more available, and also at the in another direction, opening it up so that those who were Anglicans and came in could continue to worship in a way that was consonant with the beautiful English language tradition that they had developed, that was also significant, quite significant.
In your experience, what was he like one-on-one as a person?
Oh, the complete opposite of the caricatures of his enemies, especially before he became Pope. And people actually saw what he was like. You know, they called him the Rottweiler and the Panzer Cardinal and all that, which was absurd. Because nothing Prussian about him. He was a Bavarian. He was a quiet, gentle, pious man, absolute gentleman. Courteous to his fingertips, very cultured.
As they say, a legacy is in the eye of the beholder. And over the coming days and weeks and years, there'll be much debate and analysis about his life and legacy. But what do you think his legacy should be?
Well, you see, he died principally, he died, you know, from old age. But he was Pope. Now, what's the role of the Pope? It's not to be the great Catholic preacher. It's not to be the big television star. Most popes in history had nothing like the theatrical and public leadership capacities of John Paul II. The Pope has a scriptural role. He's the man of rock. He's the successor of Peter. He's the foundation of the church. He's the guarantor that the people in the pews are receiving the same teachings that the Christ and the apostles gave, and that the unity of the church, 1.4, 3 or 4 billion Catholics, is built around the figure of Christ and the apostolic tradition. Now, in these terms, Benedict was a magnificent success. He realized that the secrets of our vitality are in the redemptive activity and teaching of Jesus Christ. That was his job. Now, he wasn't the greatest administrator, greatest executive, not a natural politician, not a backslapper as in the Irish-American tradition, but he did what he was supposed to. And that is to strengthen the faith of his brothers. It's not to entertain the non-believers or those who have rejected what we're about. They're an important constituency. We must try to reach them. But what is important is to reassure the people in the pews. And he did that. And of course, the people are coming in their tens of thousands from the churchgoers to pay him tribute.
Finally, if you were to summarize Pope Benedict as a person and his papacy in one word, what would it be?
Well, let me give two words, a Christian disciple.
Cardinal George Pell, thank you very much.
Good.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary, your bride, with you, for the child that is begotten in her is from the Holy Spirit. These are the words of the evangelist Matthew that narrate the moment of the marriage between Mary and Joseph, a feast that since the 15th century, the Catholic Church has celebrated every year on January the 23rd. According to popular tradition, Joseph gave Our Lady a gold ring, known today as the Holy Ring.
La storia di questo anello.
The history of this ring, referred to as the wedding ring between Mary and Joseph, is quite an adventurous and mysterious story in many ways. It arrived here in Perugia in the late 1400s. Previously, it was kept in the city of Chiusi, which is a province of Siena. The ring arrived here in Perugia by special ways. Probably someone who carried out a theft brought it here and left it to the city of Perugia.
Lasciato la città di Perugia.
Legend has it that around the year 1000, a goldsmith from the city of Chiusi received this ring as a gift from a Jewish merchant who wished to give it away because it incited great torment in him. Therefore, the ring remained in Chiusi until 1473, when a German friar, Winter of Mainz, decided to steal the ring and thus bring it to the city of Perugia.
Intorno a questo santo anello,
around this holy ring, then developed in history a great devotion, particularly here in the city of Perugia, that also produced important fruits from a spiritual point of view as well. So beyond whether it is really the ring of Our Lady, it is a very strong call, very much felt by the people who have then created around it a devotion and an interest. And there is also a great interest from visitors because it is a particularly intriguing element, this aspect. And therefore, we also offer it for veneration with all the caution, with all the reservations, but also with all the attention to a devotion that has accompanied it.
Una devozione che l'ha accompagnato.
Also following in the footsteps of tradition, the wedding ring that Joseph gave to Mary is today kept in a chapel in Perugia's Cathedral of San Lorenzo.
In this cathedral, almost in correspondence with the Chapel of the Holy Ring, there is a column with the image of Our Lady that has the Latin title of Mater Gratiae, that is, Mother of Grace, which later popular devotion changed it to Mother of Grace. Why Mother of Grace? She is actually a pregnant woman, as depicted in the image, and she is pregnant with Jesus. He is grace. Precisely because Jesus is grace, the mother intercedes for all the graces we need. So, there is a profound link between the mystery of the incarnation and the mystery of salvation, of redemption. So, we connect the memorial of the Holy Ring to this image that refers us to the Mother of Grace.
Alla Madre della Grazia.
A tradition that still fascinates and increases popular devotion.